Welcome to China Manufacturing Decoded from Sofeast, the podcast where we take you through some of the major topics facing importers and manufacturers in China today.
Hi there, listener. You're on episode 15 of the podcast. Now, recently we sent out a survey to Sofeast and QualityInspection.org readers asking about their thoughts about dealing with Chinese suppliers in recent times. So perhaps this year in comparison to last year. Now, a lot's been going on, of course, with the coronavirus pandemic, the US-China trade war, and other things that could be affecting their relationships. So we wanted to get to the bottom of that. And in this episode, we're going to talk you through the responses, the statistics, and Renaud will give his take on the responses that we got. Let's get into that.
Hi, Renaud. How are you doing?
Hey, great. Hi, how are you?
Excellent. Yep, absolutely fine. Thank you. Got a really interesting topic to talk about today, because recently we sent out a survey to a lot of our readers on our email list. This would include Sofeast clients as well, about the state of manufacturing in China this year. And of course, it's been a bit of a difficult year for many, many reasons, including the pandemic and, you know, the continuing trade tussle between the US and China, you know, and some other reasons. So it was quite interesting to hear what all of these guys had to say, wasn't it?
It was, yes. So basically we wondered, how do people feel in the summer of 2020? So we got the responses in just recently, and we asked about June and July, because it's probably better to make it a little bit more specific to get people to think about the recent past rather than, you know, all of 2020 so far. It might become less precise, let's say, less specific in their answers. So we just asked about June and July 2020 versus same period last year. And I mean, I was expecting some issues, you know, maybe some good and some bad, but there was actually not that much good. And we can go through them one by one, but it's kind of eye-opening, because you hear about anecdotes on this and anecdotes on that, and you're like, I've heard this three times. Maybe it's a trend. Maybe not, you know, who knows? And maybe it's just very, very temporary. Maybe it's going to get back to normal, whatever, right? And then you do a survey and then you have a better idea about where people really stand and what they see.
Okay, well, let's have a look at each of the questions in a little bit more detail, and then you can give, you know, your comments based on the data that we got back. And I think that, you know, if you're able to pinpoint any trends or any important points for anybody listening who is dealing with China, this can actually perhaps help them to formulate their plan for the rest of the year and moving into next year, of course, and, you know, maybe to avoid some issues themselves. So the first question we asked was, are shipment delays more common this year than in the same period of last year?
Yeah, well, this one I was basically, we were wondering, you know, this spring has been a total mess, right? Some suppliers very heavily impacted, some of the, you know, with sales really down, some others in some categories like some sporting goods and home office supplies, and of course PPE and so on, that get much more demand. Okay, but June and July, you know, have things kind of gotten back to normal, especially if the products are shipped by sea and everything? Where is it, you know? And the answer is, let me see, 40% said about the same as last year. Okay, shipment delays, not more common, not less common, it's roughly the same. 12.5% said there's fewer shipment delays, but compare that to 47.5%, nearly half the people who said it's more common. So nearly half the people said things have gotten worse here. And now, why is that? Why is that? That's the question, right? Some of this may be due to the suppliers. Some of this may be due to the logistics, you know, the capacity that's down because a lot of passenger airlines have stopped coming to and from China. And finally, it might be due actually to buyers. So why would it be due to buyers? Because we've seen actually a lot of people sort of put everything on hold, you know, sometime during the spring. It depends what country they're in and when they get really impacted by the pandemic. And then after that, you know, the stores are reopening, they're reordering. Oh, already out of stock. Quick. Can you make this as fast as possible? And, you know, they lost, a lot of people lost their usual, timelines and usual pace of life. You know, they work at home, they follow things around the clock. I mean, we had some clients in February, in March, that were so concerned. They wanted to chat with us in the middle of the night for them. You know, it's like, hey, but it's 3 a.m. for you. You know, are you okay? Yeah, but I'm just worrying about that. So, so people sort of don't have the same expectations also. So that might be the reason why they say, oh, you know, it's not going as fast as I would like. Maybe it's not 100% due to the buyer side. So to the suppliers, I mean. But of course, there's a lot of that, I think, is due to the suppliers, because let's say, you know, March, April, the you know, their European customers say, whoa, stop everything. Don't, you know, don't ship that, put it on hold. And it's like the sky is falling, you know. What do? They reduce the number of employees in the factory, right? And then the American customers sort of do the same. Then what do? Are you going to hire more people? No, of course not. And then when things get back to normal, well, what happens is the customers expect the same production capacity as before, everything just like before. And by the way, they can't go to the factory. So they don't even know maybe that that factory used to have 500 people. Now it's 200 people, you know, and they're sort of subcontracting some stuff here and there and sort of making buy as they can. And they have a huge backlog because their other customers are also pushing for more capacity. They might not know about that. And then, oh, you're late. What? You're late again. What do you mean? You know, you're going to send by air. Oh, it's not even possible. Oh, it's so expensive. Oh, please hurry up, send by sea. You know, there's a lot of that. So, shipment delays is not really a surprise. It's not really a surprise. Importers have been quite impacted by this one. Yes, that makes sense.
Okay. And in question two, we asked actually also along the lines of time, are Chinese suppliers taking longer to produce a given order these days as well?
Right. So it's kind of related, right? Okay, this the shipment delays, you know, do you have more or less shipment delays? And then we asked, do you feel that, you know, production is taking longer? And then this is really in line with what we just said, because here again, 10% of the people said it's faster. 47.5% said it's about the same, and then 42.5% said it's longer. So, you know, and remember before, nearly 50% said there's more shipment delays than you know, it's more common than last year. So it's very much in line from, you know, from what the respondents feel or have noted. You know, I'm not sure it's all very scientific, but that really shows us a clear directional trend. You know, it's the factories are just slower, and this is causing a lot of delays. I think it's safe to make that type of conclusion.
Sure. And the third question is also kind of related to the effect that factories have suffered from. And this was, have one or more of your Chinese suppliers closed their factories? So this might be either temporarily because they were just lacking work, or actually forever. And, you know, with the percentages, I suppose it's no surprise to hear that the majority said no, but actually 35% of respondents said that yes, they had temporary closures from suppliers, and 5% said some of their suppliers had closed for good, and then those who hadn't seen a change in suppliers were 60%.
I mean, 5% said at least one of their suppliers closed for good. The temporary closures, what is it? Yeah, I heard about it. So recently, like, you know, last month, in June, basically what happens is if the factory really has very little business, you know, if they make all of their backlog and they don't have enough orders to keep their staff busy, it's just better to stop everything for maybe 10 days, 2 weeks, send people, you know, hey, you guys can go back in your hometown, you know, just enjoy it, come back later. You know, all the managers can take a little bit of rest and everything. And also means, you know, paying lower bonus and everything. It does make sense. And some suppliers started to do it, and then a bunch of others did the same, which is rather unusual. Usually, even if it's the low season, they would still try to get some work here and there. You know, they might have fewer operators, maybe just the full-time staff, not the part-time operators, no dispatch employees, nothing like that. They would try to run a very lean, with a very lean crew, sort of. But yeah, these days, a lot of them close for 2 or 3 weeks. Or, I mean, let's say 10 days to 3 weeks. Yeah. And 5%, you know, of the respondents said at least one of their suppliers closed for good, which might mean a component supplier, you know, supplying to their assembly supplier. But still, okay, 5% of the people kind of get impacted by that, which actually is a high number. It's a high number. Because I was expecting, if you asked me in, say, in February, hey, are a lot of factories going to close? I would have said, yeah, that really doesn't look good. You know, they're forced to have a longer holiday, less production. Then some of them can't open for all of February. You know, some of them in some cities had to wait until March to reopen. And then there's the problem of this, the customers canceling orders, and so on and so forth. So some suppliers really made serious losses. However, I have not heard many suppliers really completely closing the factory. Right? It's something that actually I would have thought would have happened at a much, much, much higher rate, but it hasn't. Yeah, so the temporary closures might have postponed, you know, especially for small buyers. They might close, but they might still have a few jobs. But they say, oh, you know, this customer, whatever, they can wait 2 more weeks. I don't really care. It's fine. And they just close and then they reopen and then they start working again. So that might also impact some of the customers.
I guess those that have gone completely and shut the company down, perhaps their suppliers who were in, you know, very at risk niches, like maybe apparel and things like that.
I mean, for sure, if they were making face masks or you know, home gym equipment or one of these hot categories, they would not have shut down. They would have just enjoyed the rising tide that makes everybody happy, right, in their industry. Here it's different. For example, apparel, some of them have been hit so bad because their customers have been hit so bad. So many apparel shops have stayed closed for more than a month, and And people, you know, if people have to stay home, they don't really go out shopping, right? So a lot of importers get hit really bad and still have a lot of inventory that's unsold that they hope to sell next year. I mean, the channels are full. So it also impacts the next season, you know, the fall and winter season, because these people, of course, have cash flow problems. They're not going to order, you know, as many pieces, as many containers for the next season. So some product categories have been hit really bad. Yeah.
Okay. And moving on to the fourth question, this is also talking about things rising, but in this case, it's prices for products. So have any of the respondents seen prices rise this year?
They have, yes. And well, the exchange rate of the RMB against the US dollar hasn't really moved, right? I looked exactly 1 year ago, it was 6.9. Right now it's about 7.0. That's not a very substantial difference, right? And it hasn't really swung very far in either direction. It's basically been between, let's say, 6.87 and 7.18, something like that. It's not a very wide band. There's not that much variation. So it's not really related to the exchange rate. Now, have people seen drops in pricing? 5%. And I was thinking more people would see that, because think about it. And this is with Chinese suppliers, right? We did not ask about Vietnamese suppliers, Thai suppliers, and so on. If some big American customers are moving away from China, which has been the trend already for more than 18 months, if a lot of customers have been forced to close their stores and have held their shipments and everything, it points to weaker demand. And in the face of weaker demand, Chinese suppliers tend to be more accommodating, right? Which is normal. You know, they have to try harder, right? They're less picky about their customers and where they get the orders from. And that's the context where prices can go down. But yeah, only 5% say prices have dropped. Now, 60% say the prices are about the same. And that makes sense to me. Again, in a difficult economy, low demand, the Chinese supplier is less likely to push for price rises, right? If we had asked this kind of question a few years ago, I think fewer people would have said, yeah, the prices haven't changed. 60% is actually quite a lot. And then we asked, have your prices risen 1 to 3%? Very few people say yes, 2.5%. Have they risen 4 to 10%? Now 17.5% of the people say yes. And then more than 10%, 15% said yes. Right. So let's say more than 3% raise is about 32-33%, right? To compare with 60% no change. 60% no change does make sense, yes. So here, no big surprise, I would say.
So what do you think would drive an increase of even more than 10%, which is obviously a very high increase? I mean, what would justify that from the Chinese side?
Do you need to justify? Or
well, with everything that's gone on this year.
It's just negotiation. It's just negotiation, right? And what drives buyers crazy actually is that very often it's not justified. There's no hard data about it or no clear explanations, which makes it much harder to accept. So let's say you're in the middle of a boom of an economic expansion, and let's say that some of the raw materials see their prices go up. So, you know, if the product is made of whatever, some steel, some copper alloy, and some other materials like this, if the prices of these commodities goes up, 20%, which has happened. I mean, this is really nothing amazing on these markets. Well, the supplier can say my material prices have gone up 20%. Now, what they do very often is that they translate that into the final product price of is now 20%. You know, even though maybe the when the buyer pays 100, maybe there's 8% as for profit, and then there's 5% for the factory rent, and there is maybe 15% on the cost of labor and so on and so forth. So and a little bit for electricity and so on. So the price of the final product is not directly related to the price of the materials, but the Chinese suppliers really like to make this kind of shortcut. And what drives foreign buyers really nuts is when the price of the raw materials goes down, you cannot go back to the supplier and say, hey, last time you increased the price by X, now cut it by X. It doesn't work. Chinese suppliers, only know raise the price, and they really don't want to decrease the price because they think, hey, they've already accepted the raise in price, and we're just trying to find ways to justify the next increase of price. They've already accepted it. I mean, and their distribution channel has already accepted it. Now they're just trying to make more money at my expense, and I'm not going to let that happen. Right? This is typical old style Chinese mentality. I'm not saying this is prevalent everywhere in every Laoban's office in China, but it's really quite common. They don't really believe in, okay, let's partner up and, I'll, if I get the price down by 10%, I'll, you will get the volume up by 50% and, and these kind of things. And we'll keep working for another 20 years. And it's not the way they think. And to be fair, it's also not the way a lot of buyers have trained them to think. Because a lot of buyers would just switch for a few nickels whenever they have the opportunity. And some buyers have also been pretty good liars, and pretty good at invoking all kinds of fake, incorrect facts to get their ways to. And the Chinese are not dumb, they understand a lot of that. So it really depends, of course, on the relationship you have with your customer, with your Chinese supplier. It depends on how, let's say, strategic they see you. Maybe they think that you are famous on your market and they will sell to you even with making zero money, but they see that as a big marketing asset so that they can really boast about it, gives them some boasting rights, maybe to other factory owners, and also they can leverage that to get some other customers, right? So it's actually quite complicated calculation sometimes. You a lot of buyers don't know exactly everything that's driving the cost decisions, let's say, on the Chinese side. So you say 10% is a lot of increase. Well, first, it has to be put in context. If prices haven't moved for three years in a row, and then they go up 10%, is it horrible? I don't know, right? Because the salaries have gone up, the pressure on the manufacturers in China to pay their taxes as they should and the social security as they should and all of that has gone up, so they have to pay more. It's not necessarily unfounded, let's say, right? If it's first order, the one piece is $3, and then you're about to place the second order, now it's $3.3 because we didn't think it was so difficult, but actually we had a lot of scrap last time and we lost money. So this is our new price, you know. I mean, we talked about that like 2 or 3 podcast episodes ago, right? This is one of the ways some unethical Chinese suppliers try to play games to you know, at the expense of foreign buyers.
Okay. And the next was actually about quality issues. So we wanted to know if they'd seen more quality issues this year than last year as well.
Yeah, this one I'm not surprised.
Okay.
So, I mean, they've been seriously disrupted. Their operations have been seriously disrupted. They had, as I say, they had to let some people go, including some good people, some trained people, right, who were kind of holding things together. They've been operating on a very short-term mindset, which means, yeah, all the things we're doing for ISO 9001, yeah, all the things we promised that customer to do because that's the way to avoid that serious quality problem that they complained about 3 times in a row, you know. All of these things tend to go to the trap, they tend to disappear, to go out of mind, right? When you're wondering how to cover your costs and survive in the next month or two, and when you're afraid your number one customer might go out of business, you stop thinking long term, right? And that has a very direct impact on quality performance. They let some good people go. They might maybe hire very fast, you know, when demand sort of rebounded, when the West started to reopen, and they said quick, you know, send us some new stock. They hurried up to hire and to ramp capacity up. Well, when you do that, especially with the foreign buyer unable to come and visit and put the finger where it has to be pointed, you know, that quality issues are gonna happen. It's gonna happen. I mean, there's that makes a lot of sense. So, what did the respondents say? 35% said it's about the same as last year. 22% said actually fewer issues, and then nearly double that, 42.5% say yes, more issues. Mm-hmm. So double the number of people who say, you know, not more issues, say yes, we have more issues this June and July 2020. Again, not surprising, not a good trend. This is what we've seen also in our work with clients. The trend is not good. The risks are higher than last year, same period.
So with that in mind, I mean, what's your very quick tip on what importers who are abroad could or should be doing in order to mitigate these quality issues from their Chinese suppliers?
Well, try to keep the finger on the pulse of your suppliers, see how many people they have, see how many people they have in their quality department versus last year. Try to know who the key people are and see if they're still there. And then put some regular pressure on them, on their quality systems, on their processes, and on these things, so that they don't forget that, you know, that these things are important. We need to keep these systems up. Right.
Okay.
I mean, risks are higher. So, you know, if you can't travel to China, you know, hire some people on the ground. You know, there's a lot of companies doing factory audits. There's a lot of companies doing product inspections. These are very standard services. You know, you can make use of that. Now or never, I would say.
Oh, it's a must for sure. Yeah. Okay. And talking about keeping your fingers on the pulse as well, the next question actually was about whether the respondents have found working with their Chinese suppliers to be easier in June and July of this year than the same period of last year. So that's actually quite an interesting question as well.
Yeah, that's related, right? So 42.5% of the people said it's about the same as last year. You know, 20% of the people said they're easier to work with. And again, that that's probably the suppliers that get impacted, have fewer sales, you know, maybe lost one or two customers, or really so their volume of business go down. They have to make more efforts. That makes sense. Maybe they're calling the buyers every week. Hey, do you have more business for us? You know, they're sort of desperate. Some of them are like that. And then nearly double that, 37.5% said they're more difficult to work with. Wow. I don't know what to say. I mean, that one's I'm not sure exactly what everybody thinks when they read, you know, are they easier to work with or more difficult to work with? Different people might interpret that in different ways. Now, what is it? Maybe they're sort of upset with their foreign customers, maybe because some of them really stopped shipments or completely canceled orders, especially in North America. Some companies have been quite, let's say, violent. And maybe the suppliers say, I don't want to work with buyers from, you know, from the US, for example, or whatever, you know, I don't like them. And then they become a little bit more difficult to work with. That might be the case. I'm not sure. This one, I'm not really sure, right? Maybe they're just more disorganized. Maybe that's what people say, you know, sort of harder to work with. Because they're more disorganized, I'm not sure.
Well, it's been a difficult time for the buyers as well, though. I mean, if they're coming from a period of difficulty in their own business, perhaps they have, you know, less tolerance for certain things than they did before. So maybe in fact not a lot has changed, but both sides are, you know, perceiving that there are more issues than there used to be.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, and the last question was, is the inability to travel to China causing you serious issues?
Right, and here I was expecting most people to say yes, because so many people like to come to China, you know, maybe once a quarter, say hi to their key suppliers, see what's going on, discuss maybe the next design or next whatever, you know, what to do and so on. I was thinking most people would say yes, but actually the majority of people, 57.5%, said no. Mm-hmm. But still over 40% said yes. So people are doing away with, you know, WeChat and Skype and so on as they were doing before, I guess, but they keep doing it. Now, we asked about serious issues. It doesn't mean that people would not like to travel if they could. It just means they've, you know, it hasn't triggered serious issues, right? Maybe some small issues have gone, and maybe some projects are really sort of delayed and so on. Maybe it doesn't qualify as a serious issue, right? And then some people left some comments. For example, one of them said, hey, we're really growing fast, and when we have to fight for capacity, I get on a plane and, you know, I get in front of the supplier, I tell them, and, you know, do you want to do it or what? And then they have to commit to something, but it's not as easy from far away.
Another one said that the inability to see their suppliers face to face to work on quality issues and, you know, keep track of shipments and of course product development as well has caused them trouble, and that's led to a slow supply chain and quality issues. I mean, this ties in with the responses we've got, and the closed borders. I mean, there's no way for you personally to be able to work with suppliers face to face like that, is there?
Right. And I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I'm sure a lot of people are in this case. Yes. Another one, visit and identify new factories. Yeah. For new supplier qualification vetting. Yeah, of course, that's because there's a lot of things you want to fill. You don't want just to send an auditor and get an audit report. That sure. That's helpful to eliminate people and so on. But so it's often also good to visit them and see them personally. I think we discussed that two episodes ago, right?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Another one said that they can't really observe what's going on and sort of have an alarm when there might be quality issues coming up, right? Because they can't really see what's going on. That makes sense.
Mm. And so, someone else complained that just having pictures or video to follow up on daily production isn't the same as being able to actually see it, in person. Right. So in that case, I mean, what would your advice be?
Well, of course, there are limitations to Skype and WeChat and things like that. Mm. If they had access to a great salesperson at their supplier's site, then, they could set things up and make communication easier. Otherwise, they have to find a project manager to be their advocate and maybe go on site or talk directly in Chinese to the people and push them and put some information and so on and devise the right strategy with the buyer.
Okay, so yeah, that's that was the seven questions in the survey and we've gone through them all. There is actually a blog post where all of these results and everything is there. So anybody listening, I'll add the link to that and you can go and have a look at that. I mean, apart from certain key issues which seem to manifest themselves like, more shipping delays, more quality problems, some of the issues that you thought there were going to be perhaps haven't been seen yet. So, I mean, overall, what's your feedback on this?
Well, basically, overall, we knew about the quality issues. We knew about the delays. That's not surprising. What was more surprising was, more difficult to work with and things like that. The number of suppliers that actually closed their factories temporarily. So it's been a special time. We'll do the survey again at other periods so we can compare. Mm. That would be interesting. Just having this, sort of one point in time, I can't really tell you, we need to compare with other periods and we'll do that.
Yeah, we certainly will. Okay, great. So that it's an interesting snapshot into the state of manufacturing, as of this summer in China. I think anybody who is dealing with Chinese suppliers can definitely get a bit of value out of the results that we've been talking about. So yeah, thanks for giving me your feedback on all of these different questions that we asked. I think some really interesting stuff there, Renaud.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Yeah, it was. Yeah. Thanks, Adrian.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, don't forget to like and share, and you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other places that you get your podcasts from. See you next time.